Welcome back to A View from the Couch. My name is Rich, and with me today is a very special guest. I have my son, Miles. He hasn't done a podcast with us since, I believe, Tom and Jerry, back during COVID, if I'm remembering that correctly. Miles, say hi to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Ah, that is him. Now, if you did hear him back during the Tom and Jerry episode, you are going to notice that his voice is much deeper. That is because Miles is now a 13-year-old. He is a teenager and is only a few years shy of driving a car, which he likes to remind me of on a regular basis. Miles, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
I'm doing very good. Thank you. All right. I'm doing very well, I should say. Thank you. So first, a note of apology. We were supposed to be airing over the last 2 weeks and into this next coming week. We were supposed to be airing a series for season three. It was supposed to be the Cornetto trilogy, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End, with Paul Moderman playing the role of Jen. But the problem arose, or a problem arose, I should say, when I tried to edit the Shaun of the Dead podcast the week before it was coming out. It just didn't exist anywhere. The Zoom call that we had recorded didn't save. Now, I had switched computers. I went from a Mac to a MacBook Air, and I thought I had copied everything. This could very well be on me. It might not even be a technology issue. But that is why you haven't heard us for the last couple of weeks. We've been a little radio silent. As you guys know, we're tax professionals, and so it is the middle of tax season. It's pretty hectic. We do pre-record a lot of these shows just to make it a little easier, I guess. But as a make good, we are going to do a podcast today on a movie that just came out this past week, The First Omen. And then we'll take, I think that'll take the place of The World's End. And then the week after that, the week of the 22nd of April, we will be right back into our regular schedule with 28 Days Later, followed by 28 Weeks Later, and then we launch into our Planet of the Apes remake or reboot season. The 28 Days, 28 Weeks Later will be with the aforementioned Paul Moderman. The First Omen is going to be co-hosted by Miles here today. So, we're going to do this a little differently. I don't want to, we're not 100% prepped for this one. So we literally just walked out of the movie theater, sat down, ate some Taco John's, and then said, you know, let's go do a podcast, right?
Yeah.
So we're not, at this point, I didn't write up a transcript. I didn't even write up a episode flow or anything like that. We're just going off the cuff, natural, how do you say it? A knee-jerk reaction to this movie. Now, Miles, you are just now getting into, you're coming into your own as a horror movie buff, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've seen quite a bit of horror lately. I know this. We made a list, things that are probably acceptable for you to watch, in my realm of thinking that these are okay for you to watch. Our main thing was we didn't want violence and sex being meshed, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, the two separately are fine, but meshing them is something that is kind of a mixed signal. So that's kind of something that we kind of stay away from. So out of the movies that you have watched recently, what's been something that you've really enjoyed?
Recently, I've really enjoyed watching the first Saw movie, and I've started the second one.
Oh, yeah. The first Saw movie is a banger, right? That ending was freaky the first time you saw it. That came out back in 2004. I mean, that was 20 years ago that movie came out. And at that time, sitting in a movie theater and watching, spoiler alert, Jigsaw rise from the middle of the room where he's been sitting there the whole time, the whole way through the movie, just blew everybody's mind. It was really, really cool. What a great ending.
Yeah, it was really surprising.
Yeah, I like a good mind bender like that. Yeah. Any other good ones that you've seen recently that you've been impressed with?
Nothing that comes to mind currently.
Okay. What about something that you've seen that you just didn't like? Like, what was the worst one you've seen so far?
Worst horror movie I've seen so far?
Yeah.
I haven't really seen many bad ones.
What about Night Swim or or Imaginary?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I forgot about those.
What about the... You put them out of your mind. They were that bad, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They sucked.
All right. So that's two movies to just disregard, in your opinion.
Yeah.
If you're out there looking for some good scares, that is not where you need to be looking, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Copy that. Okay, so let's get into this one and let's see how you feel about this one. So, as I said, we're going to do this a little differently since this is kind of an exclusive special episode with Miles instead of Jennifer, and we're kind of breaking format anyway to kind of tell everybody what's going on. I'm just going to give you the rundown of who's in it, who directed it, and then we'll give you a basic plot, and then we're going to talk a little bit about how we felt about the movie and what we liked about it and what we didn't like. So the movie, The First Omen, is directed by Arkasha Stevenson. The screenplay is by Arkasha Stevenson and Tim Smith and Keith Thomas. The original story by Ben Jacoby. So that's four screenwriters for one movie. In my experience, the more people you get involved, the more diluted and more convoluted the story becomes. This is produced by David S. Goyer, who a lot of people are going to recognize him for his superhero films. He produced the Blade movies. He helped write Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. So he's got some superhero pedigree. It stars Nell Tiger Free as Margaret, Sister Margaret, Sonia Braga as Sister Sylvia, Ralph Ineson as Father Brennan, Bill Nighy as Cardinal Lawrence, Tawfiq Barnum as Father Gabriel, and Nicole Saras, I think that's how you say her name, as Carlita Sciana. The premise of the movie is Sister Margaret, or not yet Sister Margaret, she comes to Rome to work at an orphanage where she's going to do this kind of as like her last acts before she becomes an actual official nun. And she meets with Cardinal Lawrence, who tells her, hey, you're very special. I knew you were going to do great things. And he walks her to the abbey or the orphanage. And weird stuff starts happening at the orphanage. We meet a character named Carlita, who is troubled and often has to be tied to her bed. And Margaret starts remembering, hey, I used to have to get tied to a bed too. It's no fun. She kind of bonds with Carlita over this. And then from there is where things kind of start to unravel. Father Brennan approaches Margaret and says, hey, they're prepping this girl for something. They're trying to give birth to the Antichrist. And she's like, that's crazy. Margaret is like, that's crazy. Until she breaks into like a hidden dungeon where there's a filing cabinet, which is exactly what I'd expect to find in a hidden dungeon, right? Like, that's what you'd expect, right? Like, a hidden dungeon, you'd have, like, chains and, like, the bones of the people that died there in the chains, and then, like, filing cabinet for, like, your tax receipts and shit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely it. So, but she finds a filing cabinet, and in the filing cabinet is a whole bunch of birth records for children who are all named Carlita. Carlita 1 through 14. So she steals away with some of these files when she realizes that Carlita really is being prepped for something awful. So she tries to take Carlita away, and she gets taken by the priests. Now, before all this happened, her roommate, Luz, right?
That's her name.
Luz Velez, yeah.
Well, I never...
Well, you barely notice it when they say it like one time or two times.
Oh, yeah.
But her roommate takes her out dancing in like skimpy outfits because she's like, hey, this is like the last times that we're going to be able to like show off her body. It's going to be under this habit for a while, you know, and once we become nuns. And she takes her out. She has this weird encounter with this guy named Paolo. And Paolo... It gets a little weird, right?
Yeah.
She gets really drunk. He licks her face. Or at least she imagines that he licks her face.
Yeah.
Or did, wait, does she lick his face?
She licked his face.
She licked his face. You're right.
Yeah, that was really weird.
That was weird. And then she wakes up in her own bed, covered in sweat, and looking worse for the wear.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to where we were in the story. She gets taken away. The priests and the nuns take Carlita, and they lock her up. But then they end up locking up Margaret because Margaret freaks out, and they lock her up in the bad room.
Yeah.
Right? And in the bad room is where she starts to realize that she starts to have these visions. She sees this woman who set herself on fire and like hung herself in front of the kids in the orphanage, and she freaks out. They end up taking her and they sedate her. They take her in a car, but the car ends up getting crashed, and she ends up like outside of the car, but having like this like seizure almost, and her belly is like growing.
Yeah.
She was impregnated at some point, right? And she has this flashback where it turns out, hey, Paolo drugged her. Paolo took her to this place where they had her raped by a jackal. So all the things are now coming together. It's not actually Carlita that's supposed to be the mother of Damien, but Margaret, because that's what they're going for here. They're trying to get us to the point where Margaret gives birth to Damien. They're telling the story of the nun who gave birth to the son of Satan, who was switched for the baby of the thorns in the original Omen movie. Two problems. First of all, when they go to look for the grave of the nun, they find in the Omen, they find the skeleton of a jackal. So that's a problem there. The other problem is this place that they bring her burns down. I think it was the orphanage that burned down. And I cannot remember for the life of me, and I haven't seen the Omen in a while, but I cannot remember for the life of me if Damien's adoptive father goes back to the orphanage to try and find the name of the nun that gave birth to Damien, or if he goes back to the hospital to try and find the name of the nun. If it's supposed to be the hospital, it doesn't make sense because they're breaking that again. But I think in this hazy memory I have that it is supposed to be the orphanage that they're going to. Anyway, so she gives birth to Damien. She tries to kill the baby. They end up trying to kill her, which she actually survives. The cult takes Damien. They change him for the baby, the thorn baby, and he goes off to become the Antichrist. And but Margaret had actually given birth to twins, one boy, one girl. And she takes the girl and runs, so she doesn't actually die in the fire. So she takes the girl and runs. She's off in some secluded snowy mountain cabin where she is confronted by Ralph Ineson's Father Brennan and says, hey, they know you're still alive. They're going to come for you. By the way, they named your boy. They named him Damien, as if we didn't already know. But that's basically the end of the movie. So short, sweet plot summary there for the most part. If you've heard most of my other plot summaries, they're not anywhere near short and sweet like that. Let's get into some stuff that we liked about this movie. So right off the bat, I felt like they were going to try to play with our ideas of what is happening. So they kind of tipped their hand though, because at the very beginning, Father Brennan is meeting another pastor, another priest, Father Harris, who is killed in a freak accident. Now, what happens is, and they set this up, I mean, you can obviously tell what was going to happen. There was some workers that are raising a stained glass window that's going to go into the church. When the Father Brennan and this other priest, Father Harris, when they have this conversation out on the steps,
a metal pole falls through the stained glass.
Yeah, the stained glass window falls. onto the scaffolding a little bit, and it starts to break, but then a metal pole, like you said, falls through that, and it shatters it. And it, like, falls all around these guys. And they both stand up, and Brendan says, "Hey, Father Harris, are you okay?" And he says, "I'm fine." He turns around, and he's not fine. He's got a giant gash in the back of his head and clearly is going to die. So I think that is a tip of their hand right off the bat, because they're going to play this like it's Carlita the whole time. But all the seeds are there, like, from the get-go. They are, like, the priest says, the cardinal, excuse me, says, "Hey, I knew you were meant for something special," right? "We don't know who her parents were. We don't know where she comes from. You know, she was tied down too." All these things that just kind of fall into place, and you're like, well, I know you're trying to direct us over here, but it's not working. Like, you're spending too much time, like, giving us these other things about Margaret that don't make sense. Meanwhile, you're trying to misdirect us with Carlita. Do you feel like they made you think it was Carlita the whole time?
Yeah, definitely. They were 100% pointing to Carlita.
Did you think that it was her?
Yeah.
You did? Okay. Okay. I was skeptical, and I think it was because of that stained glass scene, because they tell you, oh, he's fine, but he's obviously not. It's an homage to a scene, to actually two different scenes, from the original Omen, where one priest dies. Was it a priest? I think it's a priest. Priest dies from a piece of metal falling off of his church, and it, like, impales him to the ground. And then the other one is a guy gets beheaded by a sheet of metal, or sheet of glass, excuse me, when Thorne and this dude are off looking for stuff. So they kind of play with that, because we know, if you know the Omen series, you know that people died in those ways. But then they're like, "Nope, just kidding." And then they go, "Nope, just kidding again," you know? So it was kind of this double take that didn't quite work for me. Did that work for you? Like, that bit at the beginning with the glass, and were you surprised that he was dead?
Wasn't surprised, okay. Definitely. But okay. I found it interesting because the metal fell through a stained glass painting of a saint.
Yeah.
Right? And right before that, he said he didn't want to be forgiven for his actions.
Mm. So, well, I like that. That's interesting. Yeah, okay.
That's a good one. That's kind of how I took it as.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. So a couple of things that I noticed. Margaret, the name Margaret is associated with Saint Margaret, who is the patron saint of the falsely accused, which is another one of those hints that Margaret is actually not, or that, excuse me, that Margaret, but that Carlita is not actually the one, but she's being falsely accused of having problems, right? Being like this person that's like, you know, or going to be the birth mother of the Antichrist.
Yeah.
So, and then we also have this self-immolation scene where the nun lights herself on fire, jumps off the thing, and hangs herself. Self-immolation is a form of martyrdom. Martyrdom is something that is done to save others or help others or bring attention to others. And Margaret then is kind of the martyr for Carlita in a way by the end of this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least that's the way my brain was thinking about it. She starts to have these visions too, right? Like this birthing sequence where a hand pops out of the woman that's giving birth. It is very graphic too. I did not know that this was going to be this graphic. Turns out this movie almost got an NC-17, and I took my 13-year-old son to it. So, hey, you know, it's great.
We have fun.
Welcome to manhood. Anyway, so yeah, that doesn't make you a man. Okay, so I feel like I've been talking a lot. Why don't you give me a little bit of what you took down as notes? What do you think is, you know, cool?
I thought there was, like, a connection here, because mm-hmm. when Margaret first meets Carlita in the beginning, mm-hmm. Carlita runs up to her and licks her face.
Yeah, that's a little weird, right?
Yeah. But then in the scene where they were at the club, Margaret licks, what was his name?
Paolo?
Margaret licks Paolo's face.
Yeah, I thought that licking thing was kind of funky. I didn't quite get what they were going for with that, other than, like, dog, jackal, bring it to that.
After that. When they were escaping because it was on fire, because the orphanage was on fire, Margaret started having a vision of the jackal, and it came and it licked her face.
Yeah,
and that was I feel like they were all the face licks were leading up to that.
Yeah. The face licks were leading up to that. Nice. There were some interesting imagery here. You pointed one out while we were sitting in the theater. What was that about?
Oh, yeah. When Margaret goes to pray after that, after the orphanage burns down.
No, it was before that.
It was?
No. Yeah, because they were on the run after the orphanage burns down. There was no time to pray after that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was after her, like, Paolo got cut in half by the
right.
car.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Paolo got cut in half by the car.
After Paolo got cut in half by this car, Carlita number 5 goes to pray, and she prays, but there's candles above her, and as this image pans backwards, you can see that they start to look like teeth above and under her. So then there's also two.
The hanging candles. Make like eyes, right?
Yeah, and it looks like she's in the jaw of like a demon.
Right, and that's actually mirrored in the bad room too, because there's a drawing on the floor, which we found out that Carlita's actually doing. This drawing is what she's been drawing on. Remember, she's drawn on the floor,
yeah.
And then she covers it up when people come in. So Carlita drew this. It's like Carlita knew what was going on, or at least knew she had some inkling of it, or at least
she knew what was going.
Had some suspicion, yeah. Right, of what might happen. Yeah, it was definitely interesting.
So I also noticed some imagery of the nun who hung and set herself on fire was talking to Carlita, and she had a drawing, which
they
showed to Margaret, of Carlita being pregnant with a boy. And Carlita pointed to it and said, "That's mine."
Hmm.
And I felt like that was more of a hint towards Carlita being the mother of the Antichrist, but
yeah.
Then they swapped it around.
Yeah, they definitely did the old double take there. I thought, you know, speaking of that nun that self-immolated, she shows up again. The nuns take the orphans out to, I think it's a museum, and Carlita runs off. She gets upset about something and she runs off, and Margaret finds her crying on a bench, and she's like the way she's sitting, the bench has like a statue right in front of like where somebody could be sitting next to her. And just at the last second, an arm reaches out to like comfort her.
Yeah.
And then when they cut back to the inverse angle and you see Margaret, there's literally a nun right behind her to put her hand on Margaret's shoulder and startle the audience, right? It was a jump scare. It was like the oh, that was creepy. Oh, there was another person there.
Yeah.
So, but then again, here we have the double thing again, right? The twins. There's two girls. There's Carlita and Margaret. Who we don't know which one's which. There's this double scare there. There's the switch between Carlita and Margaret. And then there's twins. I wonder, because the twin daughter survives, and I'm wondering where they plan to go with this. Because I don't know that I don't know what their plan is. And I guess there's never any mention of it in The Omen, but I guess that doesn't mean anything, because this is all prior to The Omen, and it is also kind of in between the cracks of the mythology of the original Omen, kind of in that same way, not in the same quality, but the same way that Rogue One is in the cracks of the mythology of the original Star Wars. In that we learn in the original Omen, if you've never seen this movie, if you've never seen the first Omen, you would learn in the original Omen that the mother of the child that is swapped into the Thorn's hands died in an orphanage fire, right? And that's where this story comes from, is, well, what about that nun? How did she give birth? How did she end up with the spawn of Satan inside of her? You know, that whole thing is what they're panning out. So what they did was, like in Star Wars, they took Rogue One from the opening crawl of the original Star Wars. Rebel fighters have struck their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire. And we get to see that in the original or in the new movie Rogue One, or newer movie Rogue One. That's what they're trying to do here. They're saying, well, we've got the nun in the orphanage. Let's talk about that. What happened there? Do you feel there's room for interpretation of stuff like that?
Of the...
like... well, okay, so like, when you're watching a movie or you're reading a book, it doesn't always tell you exactly what happened prior. They give you a couple of seeds and they say, okay, well, that's the prior stuff we're dealing with this story, right? For example, when I was a kid, it was in Star Wars. I keep going back to Star Wars. But when I was a kid, in Star Wars, they talk about the Clone Wars. And for a long time, nobody knew what the Clone Wars actually were. For a good 20 years, we had no clue what the Clone Wars were. Actually, more than that, because the Clone Wars movie didn't come out until 2002. So it was 25 years later that we found out what the Clone Wars were all about, at least what Lucas decided they were going to be about. But they had this mystery about them that you as a fan created in your head. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think the danger of going back and filling that is that you're going to piss off some people that maybe had it in their head a certain way. And since you're not the original creator, you aren't going to be seen, or you might not be seen as the authority on the subject. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I think this is a well-interpreted movie of what happened before the first Omen, or before the original movie.
Yeah, because this is the first Omen.
Yeah. But I don't really think we should take this as what happened actually before the first, or before the first movie.
Okay.
Because it's not the same director or writer.
Okay, sure. So, but okay, so Rogue One canonically is a prequel to the original Star Wars, and it's not by the same writer or same director at all. However, canonically, it fits in and people accept it. I feel like there's a line. I think there's a point at which some people are willing to suspend that disbelief and say, okay, well, this could have happened. I can get it, you know, or I believe that this is the, you know, the canon answer for it. What about you?
I feel like, yeah, that is a good line. But as you were saying before, in the original Omen movie, and I don't know anything about this because I haven't seen it, but you said they went back to the burned down orphanage and saw the, like, skeleton or body or something of the nun, but she didn't die there.
Right, they found the body of the jackal.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess they never really said, well, this was the mother.
Yeah.
Although in the movie The Omen, one of the characters says his mother is a jackal. In this, she's just a jackal's concubine. Yeah. Really.
Yeah.
So they do play with that a little bit. And I think that for me is where I kind of get hung up, is that they don't stay true to the original. And of course, how are you going to do it if it's not the original, right? Like, how are you going to, like, you're not going to be able to tell a story about this woman if she's a jackal, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're making some sort of Disney animated prequel movie, right? But I think diverting that far from the original interpretation or the original story is where this kind of falls flat. Whereas I think that what Rogue One did well as a Between the Lines prequel is that it didn't just insert itself. It butted right up to the beginning of Star Wars. Like, it, if you watch Rogue One and head into Star Wars right after, like, the two are pretty dang close, you know, to a continuing story. Whereas here, I don't know. I think by Rogue One doing that, it allowed people to be forgiving, a little more forgiving of the maybe inaccuracies, historical inaccuracies, as we understood it in canon. This movie doesn't do something like that to give it some kind of breadth to like its storytelling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. What else do you want to add?
I don't know.
All right, fair enough. Well, we can wrap. We're doing 5-star ratings now. We can do half stars if you want. So out of 5 stars, what do you give this one and why?
I'd say right after I saw it, I would give it a 4 to a 4.5. It was really good. Mm-hmm. But now that we're discussing it and some of the inaccuracies between it and the original movie, I think I give it a 3.5.
Okay.
Because I think it's a good standalone movie if you don't include the other ones with it.
Yeah, if The Omen didn't exist, this would be a fine movie, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's right. It's a fairly standard horror movie for me. For me, it's a 2.5, right in the middle of the road, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. You don't get into bad territory until you get to like 2, you know?
Yeah.
So that'll wrap this episode. Thank you for waiting for us to come back on the air or on the pod. We will do our level best to not have these technical problems, but sometimes technology rebels against us. And since we lost the original Shaun of the Dead, we're going to let that simmer for a little while. We're going to put that one on the back burner. We'll come back to the Cornetto trilogy at some point in the future. I don't know exactly when that'll be, but we will, I promise you, come back to the Cornetto trilogy. Next week is the first part of the 2-episode season that we don't really even have a title for. We're going to call it the 28th season. Season 4, 28 something. Because it's days and weeks. I don't know. I can't think of a catchy thing. I'll have something. Before the episode comes out next week, I'll have something made up that I think is catchy and inevitably people are going to roll their eyes at.
Like
so,
me.
What?
Like me.
Like you. All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, be on the lookout for that one. Thank you again for sitting through and waiting for us. Thank you to my guest, Miles, who now has to go and clean his room. And we will see you next week right here on the couch. Thanks for listening, everyone.
You have been listening to A View from the Couch. Visit our new website, thecouchpod.com, where you will find a calendar of upcoming releases, links to our podcast episodes, and you can sign up for our upcoming newsletter. You can also email our host directly at view@thecouchpod.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice. Every review helps us get noticed. Thanks for listening.